Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
In this week's pod, we were joined by James Garner to discuss AI in project delivery. James is an accomplished data leader in the construction industry. He began his journey as a quantity surveyor in 2000 after earning a first-class honors degree. He wrote his university dissertation on data and digitalization in the construction sector. James quickly built a strong portfolio, becoming a member of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors in 2002.
Today, James leads his global data, insights, and analytics department with a focus on business intelligence, project intelligence, data literacy, and data maturity. He uses his expertise in both quantity surveying and data analytics to drive the industry's digital transformation. Recently, James has been nominated as one of the top 100 people in Data 2023 by Data IQ, showcasing his dedication and impact in the field of project data analytics. Well, a lot of accolades there, and we can see why. It was a really good episode there, really, really fascinating topic about some of the just how the evolution of AI and his thoughts and perceptions about the rate of take up, and some really passionate insights around training and upskilling people. He seems really passionate about that, which was great to hear. What were your thoughts, Dale? What were your main takeaways?
Yeah, I loved it. James is great. He has a very, very well-rounded view of not just data, not just AI, but technology at large. I mean, we even went down the whole blockchain rabbit hole as well a little bit, and how that could be used to improve project delivery. And I think it gives a really good insight into not just the advantages, but some of the pitfalls of using the tech out there. But I think, you know, for me, one of the key takeaways is that we said it again, and we said it before, with all of the tech out there, be curious, but be careful. But we're encouraging everyone, and James is the same, and he's great, and we'll get him back again. But folks, get stuck into this one. There's also a link in this episode as well to the UK government releasing something around generative AI. So click on that as well if you get a chance. And feedback, let us know what you think. With that, we'll keep it there. So as we say, keep listening, keep liking, and keep paying it forward. Hello, project people, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Project Chatter podcast. It's awesome to have you back for, I think, what's this, episode 2 of the new season, Martin?
It is indeed.
Yeah, and it only took 2 episodes for Val to miss one, so he sends his regards, though, all the way from down under. But we do have an amazing guest once again, Mr. James Garner. How are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm fantastic. Thank you. Happy New Year to everyone, if you can still say that. And I won't take it personally. Val's not here.
Don't. We the ones, myself and Martin, are the ones that can take it personally.
Yeah, just couldn't handle another chat on AI.
Exactly. But no, it's awesome to have you, and indeed, Happy New Year to you as well. Look, I mean, we got a fantastic topic, AI in project management, but we'll go all over. It's more than just AI that we'll explore with you, James, because those of us that have seen a bit of your bio know that you're more than just AI. So we'll go all over the show. But for those that haven't seen your bio, if you don't mind sort of giving us a bit of your origin story and how you got into the space you are today, and yeah, what got you into projects?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, actually. I mean, I kind of feel like I've come full circle. So I kind of, like a lot of people, sort of ended up doing sort of a construction education, construction degree. But I was always interested in tech. And I ended up at sort of undergraduate time doing my dissertation on tech in the industry and what have you. And then I kind of embarked on the career as a QS, and but always kept my eye on what was happening, always interested. And now, you know, events have kind of overtaken themselves, and I've ended up in this position where I'm doing that as a job. So it's kind of poetic, you know, come round full circle to what I think I'm really good at.
That's awesome.
Rather than the QSing.
You know what? I know some amazing QSs. I think Martin, we had Brendan Robinson on the podcast. Was it a year or two ago?
Yeah, he's great.
And yeah, I didn't know someone that could talk so passionately and bring it across so well about quantity surveying, but he did, and he brought it to life. And I think Val was certainly intrigued with Brendan's views, but we won't go down the QSing rabbit holes just yet. Like I say, an awesome topic.
It is a rabbit hole.
It is a rabbit hole, exactly. It is an awesome topic you've got, AI in project management, and we could literally go all over the show. Mm-hmm. But I guess, where do you want to start with AI? I mean, AI means different things to different people. What does it mean for you?
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's the buzzword right at the moment, and everyone's talking about it. But, you know, it means different things to different people. And the best kind of description I can give of that is that, you know, AI can be as simple as your thermostat, right? You tell a thermostat its temperature, and then it clicks in when it reaches that temperature. That's a kind of AI. So it's nothing. In some sense, it's nothing new. And a lot of people are just sort of rebadging tools and giving it the AI spin. Now, of course, technology is amazing as well. So there are some proper AI tools out there, and it has opened up kind of Pandora's box. But in some senses, it's a natural progression. You know, we've been on this path probably since the 70s towards automation, towards AI. And even when I was, you know, talking about what I was doing back at sort of undergraduate days, there were, you know, that was probably the start of it. There were things like macros on your Excel. You know, that was, I'm not saying that was AI, but it was the start of automation and the start of people starting to use processes and start to exchange repetitive processes, let a machine do it, you know. And that, you know, it's interesting you talked about the rabbit hole of QSing. I mean, that it kind of really got me thinking a lot of the time there must be better ways of doing this, because a lot of QSing, like a lot of project management, is repetitive tasks, and there's not sometimes as much value in that. And you could let a machine do that, or you can let a macro do that, or now you can let an AI do that, and let you use that valuable time, and that's our most valuable thing, right? Our most valuable commodity is time. If we can somehow create more time for ourselves to add value to projects and to clients. And so I've always been interested in that. And it feels like, you know, now the last few years, it's really coming to fruition. So yeah, it does mean different things to different people. Be careful about getting sort of sucked into the, you know, the buzzwords and everything. I think it is a natural progression where we are now.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense to me, at least. And, you know, I don't know, sometimes we try and oversimplify things in projects, I think. And if we do try and boil it down to a single definition, sometimes it's not always helpful, I think, at times as well. And I like the way you've kept it broad and going, you know, actually, it's all about just advancing the way we do things in projects using the tech out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess in terms of AI in project management, you use something that sort of intrigued me there. You said proper AI.
Mm-hmm.
What is proper AI in project management?
Well, I'm talking about, you know, where you start bringing in things like machine learning and neural networks and large language models. You know, if you want to term that as, maybe proper AI is the wrong word, but more advanced AI using later technologies, what, you know, you'd class as AI if you were doing a degree, or what a data scientist would class as AI. But like you say, I try and be broader around it, because it can get very blurred. And, you know, when you see a product, one of these sort of softwares being launched, and it says it's AI powered, you don't really know what's behind the hood. You know, it might not be machine learning. It might just be some kind of parametric algorithm going on. But I think in terms of, you know, real AI, the stuff that we are seeing now, the stuff like ChatGPT, the stuff that feels like magic, you know, that's what I kind of think is proper AI now. But that will change, you know, that will be passe in 10 years time, and then there'll be a new proper AI. So it's always evolving and it's always changing, now more than ever. You know, there's almost like a new iteration of the technology happening, what, probably weekly or monthly at the moment. So it's a moving thing. It's really hard to define and sort of pin down as this is what AI is.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It is very, very fast moving. And I almost wanted to go the opposite, where, you know, usually we reserve sort of the second half of this to, I guess, cast a view into the future and go, you know, what's the future look like? But why don't we start there for a change? And, you know, in your mind, James. You've obviously looked at a lot of different bits of technology and what is out there, and you're on the pulse of what's happening.
Yeah.
How do you see project management in the future with technology, the way it's changing, the way we deliver projects?
So, and that changes almost daily as well, to be honest now, because, you know, as the next iteration comes out or the next feature, you start thinking again. So, you know, whatever I say now, I'll probably revise in a couple of weeks' time. But what I kind of say to people when they ask me that question is, you can't really look much farther ahead than maybe 10 years, 5, 10 years, because I think after 10 years, if we carry on the rate of progress that we're going and we get to that AGI, which is that kind of human-like behavior, all bets are off, in my opinion. And it's not just about projects. It's around, you get into a philosophical debate about ethics and stuff. It becomes much, much wider. So I kind of don't go there, because you're opening up such a Pandora's box at that point, and you start going much further than just predicting how projects are going to be delivered. And you start thinking about humanity, and you start thinking about cultures and things like that. But so I won't go there, because that'd be way too bold. But I think what we'll see over the next sort of 10, 15, 20 years is this slow progression towards that reality, where we start handing off more and more tasks to these agents. You know, these, at the moment it's ChatGPT, but there'll be other ones that come on, and we let them do the graft, the hard tasks, and more and more of our time will be spent doing what we really want to do, adding value. And hopefully making projects more successful, because we know at the moment projects are not as successful as they should be, right? And that's what it comes down to. So when people get fearful about AI, you say, well, what's the benchmark at the moment? The benchmark at the moment is most projects are late, most projects are over budget, and most projects don't deliver to the quality that you set out. So it can't be any worse. So we should embrace this technology. And what I think was going to happen is we'll get better and better performance for less and less time, because we'll be letting the AI do a lot of the work, and we'll be increasing predictability. I think, you know, at the moment, whilst it's a pet to us, i.e. we're controlling it, it will never do everything, right? And you'll still need us as professionals to control it and report on it. At some point in the future, that will change, and it will, you know, well, then we become its pets. But let's not go there, as I said. But that's where I see things going. And I think it will be, it won't be, there'll be these kind of milestones along the way, like ChatGPT, the App Store, the next iteration, but it will be kind of linear, but that with that hockey stick. So it'll be constantly going up, constantly exponential, but it will feel gradual, you know, just like 2024 will feel a bit faster than 23, 25 will feel a bit faster still. We'll probably get sort of 2030 and things will look very different, but it will be a case of, wow, how did that happen? You know, the way you look back at that old saying, you do a lot less than you think in a short period of time, but you do a lot more in a long period of time. So I reckon when we get to 5 years, we'll be looking back and saying, wow, the profession's changed. And in a lot of ways it already has, you know, you just over the last sort of year or so. Let's remember, ChatGPT didn't even exist just over a year ago, you know, as a product. And now, not everyone will admit it, but most people are probably using it to some degree. And that's happened, and it feels natural. No one's sort of saying, yeah, there's a lot of press about it, but it's kind of creeping in. So I think there'll be a lot of organic change. Don't forget, as the talent pool changes as well, as people leave university, that younger generation, they start making their way into the workforce, they come with that, you know, they'll bring that in, you know, people start retiring and, you know, the balance starts changing. So a lot of it will be quite organic, but I think we will have a moment where we look back and say, wow, how things have changed.
I'm quite interested in what you said there, because it sounds like you're kind of saying AI usage and implementation is going to happen probably over a longer period, more longer term than some of the guests we've had on some of the podcasts. So, you know, even going back to Lawrence last week, Dale, I'm interested in your thoughts after. Why do you think it's probably a bit more slow? A lot of the people we've had on are really passionate about AI and thinking it's going to, you know, change things in 1-2 years. The way I'm hearing what you're saying there is it's probably, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, and we're going to get gradually better. You know, there's going to be more, you know, you're saying ChatGPT might have been the thing of 2023, but it's kind of gradual, and there's still going to be people in these roles.
I think things will change. I don't want to make it sound like it will be ridiculously slow. You know, things did change in 2023. I think what I'm saying is there's a process. There's certain early adopters, and obviously we're in a bit of an echo chamber because we talk to a lot of people who are into it. If you go around offices, a lot of people aren't. And there is a lag. There's a lag between the technology coming out and it becoming very mainstream. And that happens with everything. You know, you look back at any technology, you go back to sort of Excel and things like that, and even the mobile phone. You know, it starts off, it gets into the mainstream, there's a hype around it, and it gradually gets adopted, but it doesn't happen like in months, over a course of maybe a few years. So, you know, I'm not saying that we're not going to see big changes over the course of the next few years. We absolutely will. But what I'm saying is that kind of route towards AGI, where we get to sort of full autonomy almost, is going to be gradual. It's going to feel organic more than anything. It's not going to be like one day we wake up and the robots have taken over. It's going to happen organically. But there will be some big change from year to year. You'll see some changes. Like the changes that we saw in 23, I reckon we'll get to the end of 24. There'll be a faster pace of change in 24 than 23. And that pace will keep increasing. So we get to that kind of hockey stick adoption.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, Martin, I echo what James is saying there. Actually, it's that bell curve, right?
Yeah.
We are absolutely in the echo chamber, but that echo chamber it's not getting bigger. People are entering the room, and that's what's happening. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we show not just the advantages but the pitfalls as well, and allow people to be curious and explore the technology out there. I think the more people will start adopting it. It is quite an interesting thing because one of the things I think is one of the barriers, and you mentioned it there earlier, James, was you mentioned, you know, some people are fearful.
Yeah, yeah.
What in your experience, or why do you think people are fearful of the tech?
Well, there's a few reasons, right? It's not just one. It depends where you are in your career. So you might have somebody who's a sort of a bit of a technophobe, and they just don't understand it, and they see it as a threat to their job. You know, there's that category. You get the people who are just too busy. You know, they want to, but they're too busy, chopping down the tree to sharpen the axe, as they say, and learn these technologies. So rather than adopt it, they'll give excuses. You know, it's human nature to give an excuse. Oh, I haven't got time for that. So rather than say I haven't got time, they'll say, well, I'm not adopting it because it's not safe or because it's unreliable, you know. And then I think even people in our echo chamber, it's just moving so fast, the technology, that it's hard to keep up. And like, even if you sort of switch off for a couple of weeks, you come back and I feel it myself sometimes. Wow, I've got a bit of catching up to do. So for someone who's not in this arena, it must be quite daunting. And I have to keep putting myself in their shoes, you know. If I feel like that after a couple of weeks holiday and not sort of tuning in, imagine what, you know, your average kind of project manager must feel like. And it can probably be daunting, and you can probably switch off and very easily say, oh, well, this isn't for me, and then find reasons. And because, again, human nature, right? If you're not going to go into it, you'll find reasons why and make excuses why. And the excuses will be those things, you know. Oh, it's not safe, and actually I tried it once and the answers were rubbish, therefore the whole thing must be rubbish. It's a lot of this is human behaviors rather than technical. You know, the technological kind of advances are amazing, but when we talk about adoption and we talk about how this is going to impact our industry, actually the bigger factor I think is human factors, and how do we get people to adopt it and get over those hurdles, you know, those kind of fear hurdles, because every fear, right, is based on some kind of something's kind of spurned that, you know, and likewise, there's a way of getting around it. And that's why I think education is so important, and making sure we're giving people the opportunity to feel like they can enter this space easily. And not make it too hard. That's why I try not to talk with jargon, because, you know, you say to LLM and they'll go, oh, God, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to stay out of that. And you just say, you know, a ChatGPT for this. And then I kind of know what you mean, you know. So try and make sure you make it as accessible as possible to people, and don't try and put it on some kind of a pedestal, because you'll just lose people then.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's bringing people along the journey with you. Because as we grow as a community and profession together, that's just better for projects in the way we deliver them. So absolutely. I totally agree with you on that aspect. The other thing that you just mentioned there, which was quite interesting, was, you know, around, you know, oh, it's not safe and this and that, which is sometimes unfounded, but actually, even if it is unfounded, there's some truth in when they say it's not totally safe.
Yeah.
And one of the things...
It's not right now, right? We don't actually know because it's still early.
Exactly. We don't know if it's safe or not. We think it's safe in the way we're using it. As you say, we believe we are controlling it, but based on the algorithms that, you know, exist in the ChatGPTs and the Bards and all the others, it's giving you an outcome and potentially controlling you, unless you have a bit of more of a curious mind and a critical mind as well. So I do agree with you. The human side comes into it, right? Because you still have to apply your critical thinking. Don't just take it as dinkum and copy and paste what it gives you. It isn't the Oracle. We're not in the Matrix. So we've got to just be aware. It's a tool at this stage to get things quicker. But just don't, I think, as you say, don't let it, don't follow the hype and just believe everything you see.
No, and now, you've got to remember who you're putting your faith in as well. You know, these are the big tech, these effectively Microsoft and Google and Facebook. Now, you know, they have got a track record of not always being honest, right? And when you've got the drama that went on at OpenAI, and for those who don't know, there was lots of kind of kerfuffle with the boardroom, and they don't even really agree about the safety of their own platform. We've got to wake up to that and go into it with our eyes open. We're at a very early stage. It's the Wild West of AI, like the Wild West of the internet back in the day, you know, when people were setting up all kinds of scams and nobody had the idea what was going on. We're in a similar place right now, and we really don't know where it's going. So we've got to be smart about it. Just know what we're doing. Don't be afraid to experiment. Don't be afraid to play around with things. Don't be scared of it from point of view of, you know, jumping in, but do it with your eyes wide open.
Yeah, agreed. You know, those that aren't aware, it does hallucinate, which is not a technical word, and you can understand exactly what that means. So just be aware, you may get hallucinations from the answers you get. But I wanted to bring it back a bit, because before we hit record, you were saying that there was news from government to just today, UK government, I take it. Yeah. And Martin and I kind of just went, let's not talk about it until we hit record. So obviously when this pod does go out, it may be a bit old news, but what is that news that broke today?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is hot off the press. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to go through it properly, but the government have released something called the Generative AI Framework for HM Government, which is created by the Digital and Data Office. And it's basically just a set of guidelines about how to use AI, exactly what we're talking about. And I think it's quite refreshing. You know, what I've looked at it so far, it's just talking about what it is. It tells people what it is. It tells you how to use it, tells you what the risks are, and tells you how to use it, what the right tool is for the right job. I think, you know, coming from government, I'm quite impressed. They're usually, you know, a little bit behind. But, you know, from what I've seen so far, this is something in the right direction. So it's good to see. And it's good to see the government doing it first, because hopefully then private practices will follow suit and realize that, okay, well, if government are doing this, is something we've got to get on with as well. Because I think a lot of people in the private sector are like, they're not sure how to deal with it. How do you deal with a kind of AI policy or whatever you want to call it? And, you know, it's right that the government leads the way. Often they don't. And it feels that they've done something quite bold with this move. So anyone wants to have a look at it, it's on my LinkedIn, but you'll find it, you know, in the government website as well. So I'm going to give it a proper read tomorrow, but I'm quite impressed.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe chuck the link into ChatGPT and summarize it. we'll chuck the link into the show notes as well. For those listening, you can go ahead and click there too. But I want to bring in Machine Gun Martin. So James, you do listen to the pod, so you know what Machine Gun Martin is all there to do, is try and ask some tricky questions and see if you can, you know, shoot some crazy questions at you.
Well, I mean, I would if you didn't steal my questions, Dale, but, you know. just flicking through the it looks a really interesting article, not too long, quite accessible. It looks some really interesting stuff there. And, yeah, like you say, it's great to see the government really leading the way on this.
Yeah, and they've got some good graphics that go with it, which is quite interesting, which they're using as flyers, like get to know your AI.
It's quite cool. We'll stick it in the show notes.
I think I'll be sitting there talking about how cool the government are, but there you go. It's a first for everything.
Going back to what you said previously about training and upskilling. So what training materials are there that are available to people wanting to get a bit more information about AI? And I'm kind of thinking, you know, Lawrence last week said, you know, the best way to get into it is just to have a go. Get into ChatGPT. Is that your kind of feeling as well, or are there any sort of open source materials, to kind of learning packs, and you know, you're kind of very conscious about bringing people on the journey, the more softer skills side as well. So what would be your tips and tricks for people wanting to get a bit more information?
So what Lawrence said was right. You know, with tools like ChatGPT, you can just jump in, right? Because it's that simple, you know, and you just got to get used to conversing with a computer, which is obviously really weird. But for most people, if they log in, create an account, and you use the free account, they can get started straight away. And it's quite a easy way in. And people will be familiar with it because chatbots have been around for yonks, right? They've never been as powerful, but we've all had the episodes of trying to deal with an insurance company and dealing with a really poor chatbot, right? So people are familiar with that interface. So that's a, you know, with ChatGPT, I would say just dive in and have a play. And if you can afford to do the $20 a month, go for that, and then you can start creating your custom GPTs. And again, it's really, really simple. You can do it's on a scale. Obviously, you can get really complicated, but you can dive straight in. But in terms of the kind of wider data analytics, project data analytics and AI, some of that's a bit tougher, right, to really understand the fundamentals and, you know, dealing with things like Power Apps or Power BI, and all these things are connected. But that does need a bit more in terms of background education and maybe a bit more tuition. So, you know, I've been on, was lucky enough to go on the data analyst course. There's a few of them out there, but if you're lucky enough to live in England, it's funded by the government, so you can do that. But, you know, there's a lot of one-day courses out there. You can just do kind of a boot camp. I mean, in Gleeds, who I work for, we do sort of one-day courses, introduction to project data analytics, and, you know, one-day courses in Power BI or one-day courses in Power Apps, or data for leaders, all these kind of courses, depending on who the audience is. But a lot of the times what we do, and we did this internally, and we also offer this for clients, is this kind of data maturity assessment. A lot of people don't know what they don't know. What is the starting point? So often the best thing to do is just do a quick kind of view of your organization, if you're doing it at an organization level, you know, as to what's the current state of play. Because number one, you might find a bunch of really smart people that you didn't know were there, who you could bring out and upskill at a higher level, maybe on a level 4 or even a level 6 kind of course. But then you'll also find those people who are interested, but they don't know where to start. So from that, you can start putting them in buckets. You know, these people will be really useful for a one-day course. These people can go on to data analysts. So that's a way to do it on an organizational level, and something that, you know, I'm starting to do a lot with organizations, to kind of take the fear away from doing it, because it's like I say, it's not about tech. It's about knowing what your current landscape is and saying, right, okay, that's where I currently am. This is where I want to get to. And then these are the courses to help you get there. And like I said, there's lots of good providers. But from a personal level, there's lots of kind of self-serve stuff. There's a company called DataCamp. Microsoft have got a lot of free courses where, you can pick up some skills and you can sort of self-learn. There's even things like Udemy courses. If you've got the appetite to get started, what I would say to people is don't be afraid. Just dive in, find a course. You know, you could subscribe to DataCamp, or you could go onto a Microsoft course and just get started. And you don't know where that might lead you. That might be enough. It might be enough just to give you enough knowledge to talk knowledgeably about data analytics and about AI. Or you might find, wow, this is really interesting, and you start going in you start diving in a bit more. So I think that's the message, really, Martin. It's like, don't be afraid. Get stuck in. It's not this stuff with all the acronyms and all the tech. It can be a bit daunting, but it doesn't need to be. I'm not a technical person. You know, I'm not a coder. And I kind of sort of dived in and did the analyst course. And I could just tell you, there's nothing to be afraid of. You know, it really is okay.
That's brilliant. Yeah, it sounds for something that has the perception of not being very accessible. It really is. Like you say, I've seen some of the Microsoft courses, the Udemy courses are fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
And just, you know, plenty of good free resources just to get people into the system. And yeah, like you say, there might be some people within companies where it turns out they've got a really amazing data analyst. I think at our previous company, Dell, there was someone who they found almost out of the blue who had these amazing BI skills, and it was great to see them.
You would never have known otherwise. Yeah. So, you know, it's worth the value just for that, just to do that.
So going back to the theme of training and education, you mentioned, I think you did a QS in, you got a QS in background.
Yes, yeah, I did that.
Do you think this is something that kind of you can almost bolt onto a degree program or a training and an apprenticeship program? Is it something that's being done already? Do you know? And is it something where you could start teaching in schools? Maybe, I don't know how soon you want to try and get people.
Well, that's a really interesting point. You know, I kind of raised it before, is what we have to realize is that the bar's being raised every year because the computer science is becoming more and more part of the curriculum. I think it's part of the national curriculum now, and lots of people do it for GCSEs. It's one of the most popular subjects. So more and more kids are coming out of school and going into the workplace expecting to use their skills, right? And if you don't have that environment within your company to allow people to express themselves, you know, we struggle enough with a skill shortage in this industry, and we shouldn't put a barrier on it, because otherwise, you know, kids will come out of school maybe wanting to say a law degree, and then they've got the data skills to go with it, and if that doesn't embrace data, you know, maybe they can look somewhere else. And I think it's an opportunity for the construction industry to say, you know, we embrace data analytics, we embrace new ways of doing things, and hopefully we can attract this kind of high caliber of students. I mean, I just look at my own kids. You know, they're very natural around AI and coding. In fact, I get my youngest to help me with coding all the time, and they're very natural in the 3D environments. They're very so it's going to be a bit of a shock for them if they come out of school into an environment where they're not allowed to let that sort of flourish. And so I think, you know, there's a responsibility from us as an industry as well. And, you know, I know the APM are doing a lot with their body of knowledge, trying to introduce it to that. I'm doing a lot of work with the RICS. So I've just been elected to the construction board at the RICS. And I know they're setting up an AI working group about how we can introduce that more into the curriculum. And I think it is an important part of the curriculum. And we've got to take it away from people thinking that data is for.
This episode is sponsored by Dell Tech, your gateway to peak project performance and profitability.
Dell Tech's world-class PPM solutions offer robust cost control.
The data people, and that surveying or project management is for a certain type of person. It's actually combined. And I go back to when I did the APC to become a chartered surveyor, and they always had this kind of competency called data. I can't remember exactly what's called, something to do with data. But that competency hasn't changed probably in like 20 years, right? And it needs an upgrade. Then they recognize that. And I think most kind of institutions are the same, is that, you know, this has to be a key component and a key competency within whatever the main role is, whether that's project management, engineering, architecture, or surveying.
Yeah, you bring up some good points there, James. And it's a conundrum, I think, because, as you say, it's a constantly evolving landscape and the pace at which it changes. And Martin's asked a very tricky question there, because I don't think you can do a university degree over years and keep up with the rate of change when it comes to the tech.
No way.
Yeah. What I did want to ask you, though, because one of the things that I think we're seeing more of, and this is probably something that you're seeing quite a lot of just because of, you know, what you do and the interest you have in this space, is, do you have any really good examples that you can share for tips and tricks for those listening of how to use AI in project management or any technology that have yielded really good tangible results?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think Lawrence mentioned it last time. There's a lot of people who will say they're not using these tools, but they are. It can be quite mundane, right? It can be on the level of just helping you compose an email to the right audience and in the right way. So, you know, there's lots of people, I think, who would have started at least experimenting with that because it's such an easy thing to do. You write an email, put it into ChatGPT and say, you know, make this friendlier or make this, you know, more formal, whatever you want to do, and it will do it for you. So, you know, that's a really entry point, a good entry point. But they're not from a more kind of, I suppose, complex layer. If I look at what we're doing at Gleeds at the moment in using sort of machine learning algorithms to help us predict durations and costs, which is a lot more complicated because you've got to have the data behind it to make that happen. That's not something you can just chuck into GPT at the moment. And that's yielding really good results, you know. And what we're trying to do is make people more efficient. Now, again, these aren't things to replace surveyors with. They're tools to enable qualified people to do something that might have taken them a day to do in maybe a shorter period of time, but they still got to do the due diligence. They still got to do all the things they would do if they got an assistant to do it, but, you know, they can do that a lot quicker. So we're utilizing everything on that spectrum, from helping people produce estimates or programs down to, you know, utilizing things for things like emails. Now, obviously, one of the concerns at the moment around ChatGPT is that you can't put any sensitive data into it, because unless you've got the enterprise version, which is very expensive, you know, you're not sure what's happening with that data. So we do have a very, very clear policy that you're not allowed to put any confidential data into ChatGPT, which is the right thing to do at the moment, because as I said before, we're not sure exactly where it's going. But that doesn't mean you can't do anything. So I'll give you a good example. One of the things that my team does, as well as the kind of techie stuff, is we do all the market research around the industry in terms of market forecasts, inflation forecasts. And we've historically, those were published as good old PDFs. And we do it all around the world because, you know, we cover pretty much the whole globe. And, you know, that's graduated into little websites that we issue it on so people don't have to read the PDF. But now what we've done is we've trained a GPT model on it. Now, we're absolutely fine to do that because that's publicly available data anyway. We make that available publicly. So we've got no problems with training a model on that. And then we can give that out to clients, make it available internally. So rather than having to read reams and reams of market reports, you can have a conversation with our market reports now, which is amazing, you know. And it, yeah, it's a bit of a gimmick around it. It's quite cool, but genuinely useful as well. And I use it myself all the time. Like if I need to find out something, because we do so many of these reports, sometimes, you know, to find a piece of information, I can just, you know, talk to this little chatbot that we've built, which is trained around that. So those are just a few examples. There's plenty more. And I kind of surprised myself a little bit about how many use cases we have around it. You know, it's starting to get baked into pretty much all the solutions that we're starting to build in our digital team at the moment.
Yeah, you're right. There are plenty use cases and there's plenty evolving every day. I mean, if you're following the right people on LinkedIn, you'll see, you know, the pace at which the use cases are becoming more and more apparent. But yeah, thanks for sharing that. I, you know, it's one of those where we talk about the theory, we talk about the potential, and you know, it's good to hear how people are actively using it today, because then that sparks others listening to go, actually, maybe I should try that. You know, what's the harm if others are doing it?
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, the entry point can be quite, you know, quite easy. You can sort of jump in, you can play around with ChatGPT, you can play around with the free version of Power BI. And, you know, you can get up to date with both those tools pretty quickly. You know, if you understand Excel, you can pretty much get started with Power BI. I'm not saying you'll be an expert, but the cool thing is these things kind of complement each other. So when I first started learning Power BI, you're thinking, oh, God, I've got to learn a whole new programming language, this thing called DAX that sits under Power BI. But now you can actually say, ask ChatGPT to write you your DAX code, put into Power BI. And of course, those things with Copilot that's come out, for those who don't know what Copilot is, it's kind of the Microsoft assistant that bakes this kind of model, this GPT-4 model, into their Microsoft products. They're just becoming more and more entwined and integrated. So, you know, you've got these separate little sort of pools of AI, but you're going to see it converge more and more.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you.
It will become invisible as well. You know, it will start just becoming invisible. You won't realize you're using AI a lot of the time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Fabric, you know, Microsoft Fabric as well, is where it stitches it all together. But just you mentioned a little bit about, you know, you need the data and having access to it and having public data. And I feel like if industry did come together and made the data freely available, then that would help. And we know there's various, I guess, endeavors at trying to make data freely available. But do you think we'll ever get there? Because there's this whole sort of, I guess, angle of, well, there's IP. Is there really IP? You know, all that sort of back and forth. Where do you stand on that? It's about sort of just, you know, we should make project data freely accessible to everyone, because that will actually just help the industry at large.
Yeah, well, the way I say, we all kind of fight amongst each other saying we've got some kind of inherent value in this data. And I know, you know, there's a few people in the space who talk very passionately about this in terms of data trust and what have you. And, you know, this goes back to culture again. This isn't about tech. This is about culture around companies thinking, I'm not going to share my data with you because it's got some value. And I think the bit that everyone's missing, and it's quite, you know, whilst we're sitting there all fighting amongst ourselves over this data, over the other side, we're willingly giving all our data to the software companies, like Autodesk. It's like, yeah, you know, without even batting an eyelid. And what's worse, we're paying them to give them the data. So it's kind of... you know, it's quite frustrating in a way when we're having those conversations, when you realize that that's happening and these software companies are building up these huge databases of project data, which inevitably they're going, and they already are doing, you know, they're going to end up packaging up and selling back to us. So I think we do have to come together. I think there's just not enough projects. It's not like we deal with big data in terms of like banking transactions where there's billions of transactions every day. We're talking about construction projects where even if you totaled every single relatively big construction project in the UK, we're not talking about billions of line items. So there's not enough that we can be greedy. We really do need to share. I know, you know, there's a Construction Data Trust which has looked into it. There's what the IPA are doing with their benchmarking service, which is a really good kind of step in the right direction. So there's various initiatives going. There's the BCIS as well, but I think they were part of RRCS, but now they're a private company, or at least partly private company. So there's these kind of bits going on, and I wish there was a way of easily getting people to share data, because we will wake up one day and it'll be kind of too late, and we would have given the control over to the big tech companies. And, you know, that's probably my biggest fear and the biggest thing I've been trying to rally against. Like, if you're going to do that, at least do it knowingly. I don't think people realize what they're doing when they sign that Autodesk license.
Yeah, I agree. It's the T's and C's, right? Yeah. The other one is we've been talking a lot around AI and data. Where do you stand with sort of more AI and robotics on site? Because there is a lot of tech available, everything from surveillance, right, through to potentially where we could perhaps program the right robotics and maybe even start constructing, you know, certain elements. So where do you stand with that?
I think it's a huge opportunity because, you know, you think about where the messiest bit of the whole process is actually building the thing. And it's the most dangerous. It's where the most accidents happen. And, you know, if we can find a way of reducing that by taking away the guesswork and using, you know, you're never going to have a totally sort of humanless construction site. But if we can reduce the number of people on site, you're reducing the number of things that can go wrong. You're reducing the number of accidents. And you're improving efficiency. So I think robotics is really, really interesting. And again, it all goes hand in hand. When people talk about AI, I kind of think, well, you know, that doesn't stand alone in its own little pool. You've got AI, you've got robotics, you've got, VR, AI, you've got quantum computing, you've got blockchain, all these things are going to come together and converge. And I think the robotic side of things, and of course the uptake in AI is making the robotics, that kind of hockey stick kind of growth is making the possibilities with robotics grow more and more. So it's all complementing each other. And I think we've started to see on sites already, you know, again, we're talking about, you go around a site now, it's already starting to become unrecognizable to what it was 10 years ago, because you've got these little drones going around, you've got people going around with cameras on their hard hat, which are doing LiDAR sensing and what have you. So it's already starting to look different, right? The site's already starting to look slightly different to what it did even 5 or 10 years ago. And I think that will just continue, and you'll start seeing more 3D printing. That's the other thing I haven't mentioned, 3D printing elements. And you'll start seeing more and more robots on site doing some of the work. And let's not forget, right, you know, going back to what we said earlier, that we've been on this journey for some time. You know, as soon as we started using hydraulics and we started using cranes, that was the start of going to robotics anyway. If you go to a manufacturing facility, it looks like there's robots there already. So all we're going to be doing is bringing that into the construction site, and we're going to be advancing the technology. So it's a natural thing. We just haven't been able to do it yet because every construction site was different, and we were kind of starting from scratch each time. So I'm really excited about that, but mainly because I think we can reduce the uncertainty around site, and we can, really important, if we can reduce the amount of accidents and deaths that happen on site, that's obviously only a good thing.
Exactly. That's the health and safety impacts of AI. It's just going to bring so much more, more culture and safety, around it, which is brilliant. But I'm kind of intrigued, going back to something you mentioned earlier about, so if I relate it to projects, which of the project functions do you think will benefit most from the greater uptake in AI? So I'm thinking, you know, you mentioned at the start commercial, that, you know, it could sort out a few compensation events.
Yeah.
Who's in the right, who's in the wrong, you know, estimating, just having that real benchmarking data to know what to load into your future bids, projects, planning. We all know what it can do. There's already some really cool tools out there. Cost control. Are there any things that you think will particularly benefit in the short term from the uptake?
I think most of the consultancy services will benefit. Well, it all goes down to whether they embrace it or not, right? So if you embrace it, it can benefit you. And I think Greg Lawton from Nodes and Link raised a really good point to me once, which has stuck with me, which was, you know, it's going to change workflows rather than sort of change job. You know, you still got to do, these things still have to happen, right? Whether it's scheduling, whether it's risk, whether it's cost, it still has to happen. And if you introduce AI or whatever, it doesn't have to be AI, it could be blockchain in terms of changing the way that we deal with contracts. Those things still have to happen. They just happen in a slightly different way. And that's going to change the workflow. So there'll still be things to do, and it will probably shorten some, like I said at the very beginning, it will shorten some of that kind of grunt work that we have to do. And it will mean that we can spend more of our time adding value, because none of us got into this job to spend loads of time, you know, as a QS taking of quantities. That's not really what that's something you've got to do to get to the point that you can then advise the client, help him make decisions about budgets. That's what we really want to do. And that still has to happen, but the AI will help us get to that point a lot, lot faster. So I think most of the consultancy service, whether you're an engineer or you're an architect, you know, talking about generative design for an architect, being able to come up with infinite options on a floor layout to present to a client, I mean, that's just going to, you know, delight the client, isn't it, for a start? And you can then get on with doing, making sure you've got the right options, so you're setting off on the right foot. So I think most of the consultancy services, I think, will if they grasp this, can benefit.
So if you follow on from the consultancies, we've got the main areas. I'm kind of intrigued how you think some of the associations, things like APM, RICS, how they're going to evolve with the uptake of AI. Because, you know, in theory, the things like the body of knowledge could be accessible in ChatGPT. Effectively, the kind of principles and standards will be baked in. Do you think they'll kind of evolve to be more of a networking, or do you think always they're going to be there to really, not sure, can't think of the right word, but the kind of key principles of projects maintaining the good project management is being done across the industry. Like, how do you think they'll kind of evolve with the bigger uptake in AI?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a huge place for these institutions. You know, the APMs look after the project managers, the RICS, you know, they look after surveys. And, you know, they've gone through revolutions and changes before. You know, the surveying profession, as an example, was not the same as it was when the RICS started. You know, so, you know, these things do naturally evolve. It's just going to evolve quicker. And there will be changes, but I still think there's a huge place for these institutions. And actually, going back to what we were talking about before about data, you know, they've got a big role to play in sort of saying how data should be collected and maybe helping to mandate, working with government and working with some of the government bodies to help set out some rules and some reasons why we should be using data, and also to protect us from the big tech companies, from that fear I was talking about before. So I still think there's a huge place for them. And, you know, I'm very proud to be working with both APM and RICS to help them set these standards. But undoubtedly, they're going to have to change. And I think, you know, like all the consultants, all the contractors, everyone will be affected, and not just in our industry. You know, there was a report that came out, I think just last week, saying that, you know, a significant percentage of jobs are going to be impacted by AI. I think that goes without saying. So it's not like it's just the construction industry are going through this. I've got friends in the legal profession facing the exact same kind of challenges. I've got friends in the creative industries, whether that's graphic design or music, having the exact same conversations, just a different subject. So, yeah, I think, you know, in fact, they could almost make themselves more relevant. There's a huge opportunity for these organizations to say, look, I know there's a lot of fear. We're going to help. And they are. They're all good. To be fair to them, they are grasping it. You know, certainly APM and RICS, they're grasping it, and they're trying to work out how can we help our members navigate this new horizon.
Yeah, it's an interesting space, James. Do you reckon we should start our own association or institute?
Well, we'll let the AI do it, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Start telling us what to do.
It'll be self-governed. There'll be autonomous agents that go around and tell us how we should run the association and whether or not people should actually be involved in it at all.
But you laugh, but there is a thing on blockchain. I know we haven't really covered blockchain. These things called DAOs. I'm not sure if you're aware of them. They've got decentralized autonomous organizations. And that's exactly what you talked about, Dale. It's basically an organization which is run on a blockchain, and where everyone kind of votes, totally decentralized. So that's already starting to happen. And I think there's a couple of states in the US that have actually declared that legal now as well. So it's, yeah, again, something else that's going to start making its way into society.
Well, let's pull on that thread a bit with blockchain, because quite some years now, we had Fred Shibesta on the podcast. I know if you know who Fred is, he's the founder of one of these large sort of blockchain companies in Australia or something. Finder, I think it is. Yeah.
Okay.
And we were chatting to him about blockchain tech when blockchain was, you know, all the buzz before ChatGPT or AI or anything like that.
Yeah.
And we asked him, we said, you know, in your opinion, do you think that, you know, blockchain has a role to play with project delivery? And he said, no. But you seem to suggest that it does have a role to play. What role do you think blockchain plays when it comes to project delivery or project management?
Well, how long ago was that? How long ago did he say that? Was that a few years ago?
This was probably two and a half years ago, maybe.
See, that's an eternity in the tech space.
Exactly.
So that was probably true then. But I think, the obvious use case for me is contracts, right? So smart contracts, which can be governed by blockchain, put on like Ethereum or something like that, is a classic use case. And it's been done in other industries. You know, it's been done in the shipping industry. So the classic use case for me at the moment is in the construction. One of the biggest problems is payments, right? And trying to get payments through this huge supply, you know, from client to main contractor to subcontractor to suppliers. And lots of people go bust because payment terms are crazy. Now, you know, if you use blockchain for that whole, you can make that whole process automatic. You know, if you, and if you bring in cryptocurrencies, and I know it's, cryptocurrency's got a bit of a bad rap at the moment because of the scandals, but you know, it will come back. The government are looking at the digital pound, things like that. It will come back. You could, in the not too distant future, have a situation where, at the press of a button, of a valuation, which may be done by AI, the whole chain gets paid, you know, and it just filters down. But also in terms of governing a contract. So if you think about a contract, a construction contract, whether it's JCT or NEC or any of them really, all they are is a set of rules, right? Just telling you what to do. Take compensation events. It's very rule based. You know, you will do this by that date. And the cause of most disputes in our industry is because someone hasn't followed one of those rules. And usually why it ends up being a dispute is because there's not clarity about what someone did. And there'll be the reason why there's a dispute is because there's disagreement. So one person will say, I did this. And the other person will say, I did this. Right? In theory, if you put that all in the blockchain, you put the contract onto a blockchain and it's all recorded on this decentralized ledger, there is no argument. It takes that whole thing away. And if you and then you actually use the contract to govern the project like it should be done, unlike what we do at the moment, which is sign a contract, put it in a drawer and don't take it out unless there's a dispute. You know, hopefully there's not a dispute, in which case, great. But by the time there is a dispute, it's probably because you haven't followed the rules. So I think that's an obvious use case that I could see happening and has already been done in other industries. Now, obviously, the kind of things have to catch up, you know, the kind of legal profession has to catch up and be comfortable with it. Then the contract houses have to catch up and be comfortable with it. And then the clients have to be catch up and be comfortable with the fact of mandating that in their contracts. But again, the government could do that. If the government turned around and said, in all our contracts, it has to be on a blockchain, then things change. You know, so I think blockchain has got a role to play. Absolutely.
Yeah, a self-executing contract would be amazing. This has happened, therefore, go, you know.
Yeah.
And with the tech available today.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. We need someone, maybe there's a willing client out there that's happy to test it and then showcase to the world that it works.
There's a couple of use cases actually that we're, you know, that I'm hearing about being prepared. So I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, if you know the folks and they're willing to come and share, because as you know, this podcast is all about sharing and paying it forward, and you know, that's the best part about it. So it's awesome to just kick the tires on the possibility, the art of the possible out there, but also to be curious. And you know, we are heading towards the end of the pod, but before I do, I know there's something that you're very passionate about, which is, you know, how we govern and safeguard AI and technology in general when we're using it. Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned government. Government has a role to play in that. Mm-hmm. But what are we safeguarding exactly?
So there's a few things, really. So a lot of it's around data. So, you know, fundamentally, all these AI algorithms are trained on data, you know, at the moment. And you could use the argument, well, that's what humans are trained on. Everything's data, right? So you take a baby and a baby learns, and it learns through some kind of data. It happens to be sensory data, right? So it's no different. But the danger is who owns these algorithms? And at the moment, it's the big tech companies, and we're willingly giving away stuff without really thinking about what we're doing. But I think often, Dale and Martin, it's just common sense, you know. It's just not doing anything that feels like, hang on, should I be doing that? I'm uploading a document that's confidential. Should I be doing that? Well, obviously you shouldn't. If it's confidential, you shouldn't be. If that's client data, you should not be uploading that data to a large language model because you don't know where it's going. And the problem with these large language models is they're trained on the data. So if you upload a piece of client data, then in theory, if someone else comes along and asks a question, then it could repeat an answer which is based on that confidential client data. So that's the danger. So that's one kind of thing we got to guard against. The other one is a bit more existential. We don't know where this is going, right? We really don't. And as I said before, even when you have that kind of drama around the biggest AI company in the world, because there's a disagreement about how fast this thing's going, and what do they know that they're not telling us? you know, we just got to be a bit sensible and a bit careful. Yeah, I'm a great believer in this technology. I love it. I think it's like magic, you know. I find it incredible. But I'm also not naive enough to pretend that there are huge risks with the way it's going. So you just got to, like, same way as you go into a swimming pool, you don't jump in at the deep end. You just walk down the steps and you get up to your knees and you make sure you're feeling comfortable. Just always feel comfortable. And I think on an organisational level, there's things you can do. And now the government have launched this. I'm hoping a lot of organisations can use this as a benchmark. But, you know, it's really simple, an AI policy, actually, for an organisation. All you've got to say is this does not take away your responsibilities as a professional, right? It's as simple as that. Just don't do anything stupid. Yeah, you've got to put a bit more words to it than that. That's fundamentally what it is. But from a personal level, I think it's scary because, you know, taking education, for example, yes, you can use AI to write your coursework or papers if you're a student. Or if you're a lawyer, we all heard the case about the lawyer that used ChatGPT to cite some cases that didn't exist. You know, that's just stupid, right? That's just stupid. So you're never going to stop stupidity. But all you can do if you're part of an organization or if you're safeguarding your own is just think twice. Just think twice about doing things. Where are you uploading this data? Where is it going to? And if you're not sure, just check.
No, I was just going to say, I think, you know, we've obviously spoken to a few people over the past sort of 18 months around this topic. And I think the key sentiment is what you're echoing there is be curious, but be careful.
Absolutely.
You know, we say that a lot. And I think it's true in that, yeah, be excited. It's awesome tech, but just proceed with a little bit of caution. So, yeah, no, absolutely spot on. Look, we are heading towards the end of the pod, but it would be remiss of us not to take you through Fiverr, which is a pop quiz that we have. And for this, I'm going to bring back Machine Gun Martin.
Machine Gun Martin, right.
I think you know the drill by now, so let's make a start. Okay, number one, biggest misconception about AI.
Biggest misconception about AI, that it's new and it's just come out in the last year.
Brilliant. Number two, are good leaders born or made?
A bit of both, I think. I think it's nature and nurture. I think you can take somebody who isn't a good leader and turn them into a leader, with training. But obviously the best is to have both. Someone who's naturally good, who also is willing to learn and become better.
It's wise words. What's your book recommendation for our listeners?
Oh, there's a few there. The one that got me into this is the book called The Singularity Is Near, which came out about 15 years ago. And I think a sequel is coming out soon. But that basically predicted everything that's happening right now, but also predicts in sort of 2030. And the singularity is basically the point that machines become smarter than humans. And in the book, I think he predicts about 2035, something like that. And the interesting thing about that book was that, you know, for the first sort of 10 years, everyone was saying, this is nonsense. It's nonsense because, you know, we were still plateauing. And now I think it's overtaken his predictions. So he's going to change some of his predictions to bring it forward. So, yeah, that's well worth it. It's a quite hefty book, but it's a good it's the one that got me into all this, really.
Nice one. Yeah, I'll check that one out. So number four, if you were stuck in a lift with three people, who would you want them to be?
Oh, doesn't have to be just tech people, does it?
It can be anyone you want.
Alive or dead?
Anyone you want.
Wow. Okay. That's a podcast all in itself. Probably from a tech perspective, it'll be Bill Gates and then John Lennon and Gandhi.
Nice.
That'd be a nice combination.
Been interesting a few hours. And finally, hopefully repeatable, what was your last ChatGPT question?
Oh, do you want me to check? Let me have a look. Oh, it was I was designing a logo. yeah, design me a logo for a album cover. Because in my spare time, I'm a very bad musician. So, yeah, so I'm letting that do it for me as well.
Brilliant. And that's what ChatGPT can do, folks.
Exactly. And it's, there it's we not go. Bad, actually.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. James Garner, thank you so much for being such an amazing sport. Thank you for sharing your opinion, your views so openly, so candidly. We really appreciate your time. And, you know, we'd love to have you back as the tech evolves as well. I know you'll keep a... finger on the pulse, as you always do. Those that aren't connected with James, connect with James. He shares some amazing news, insights, and thoughts with the world on LinkedIn. So please do check him out there. But James, before we let you go, any final thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with?
I just want to thank you both. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'd be happy to come back. The only thing to make people aware of is I do a weekly newsletter on both LinkedIn and another platform. I'll give you the link to it. It just curates all the news. And, you know, I started that just because I was on the weekend being a bit nerdy and just reading everything. And I thought I'd sort of publish that for people, and it's sort of taken off a bit. So feel free to subscribe to that. It's totally free. And then you get a nice little digest of everything that's happened in the last week. So I'll give you the link for that, Daryl Martin.
Awesome. No, the pleasure is all ours. And like I say, we'd love to have you back at the future. Absolutely. At some point. But there we have it, folks. That is the end of this episode. But remember, please do help us pay it forward and share a link to this episode on your favorite social media. Once again, a massive thank you to our guest on this episode, James Garner. And thank you all for listening. Till next time, we say stay safe, be disruptive, and have fun doing it. From me and Martin, it's bye for now.
Project Chatter supports and is a member of Zero Construct. Zero Construct is a new working group that wants to lower carbon construction. Not everyone will be aware, but construction contributes to around 12 to 15% of total carbon emissions.
This is a staggering amount, and we need to reduce it. We are a growing community of people that want to help make this change. Everyone is welcome, whether you're an engineer, contractor, or consultant. You just need to want to make a difference.
Our aim is to grow a network of experts so we can all learn from each other and make a positive impact in the places where we work. We'll do this by sharing knowledge and making it accessible in engaging ways.
To join us and find out more, please visit zeroconstruct.com and register as a member. Thank you, and we look forward to speaking with you soon.
For more information, blogs, or to support our charities, visit projectchatterpodcast.com. And if you would like to sponsor the podcast, get in touch via our website.
You can also leave us a voice message via our anchor page and let us know if there's something or someone specific that you would like on the podcast.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.